Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 24. So you had a birthday cake that you shared with
the... We were taken back to the lab.
And there's another cake.
And we had a cake at tea time, which Mrs. Price made, but it was a quack cake, which is like a... Well, it's like sour cream. It's like the metal still makes them similar sorts of cakes. And it was, well, it was smashing anyway. And it was just an ordinary size, about 8-inch round cake tin, and then snaps and beer.
What did you think about that at the time? I mean, you're in the middle of a war, and the two countries were at war with each other.
I thought it was all right. But of course, there was a lot of sarcastic remarks when I got back to the camp.
Like what?
Well, then, bloody hell, Sullivan, 21, you're going to bloody birthday, okay? Of course, there was a lot of more remarks about what was I doing with the war. That was beside the point. A lot of sarcasm.
Well, the other prisoners.
I don't think anybody was really envious of what. Because there was. We'd got to a point where people were. The parties would say. We knew we was more or less safe, can you say? We was accepted into the village. There was no animosity from the Germans themselves. It was, on the whole, it was quite a, not a pleasant time, obviously, because we were still homesick.
Were you still hungry, even with the parcels?
Well, you wasn't never overfed, but you wasn't... We wasn't that hungry the same as them being when we were short of food. There was no more scavenger for food. We still pinched potatoes, but we didn't. Because we didn't scavenge for food. And I mean, we didn't rely on our giving us a bit of a sandwich at dinner time, anything like that. We very often had biscuits and cheese, which we often gave to the German Otto.
But in the early days, it was different.
It was different. We were hungry.
Now, you mentioned off the tip, you know, we talked earlier about Mrs. Price and her husband going off to the war. And you, could you tell us what happened like a little later incident?
Well, I mean, when we found out he'd been captured in Russia. Well, obviously she was upset in the illness, so was the girls. We don't want to go into the...
Did that change her reaction to how she treated?
No, not a bit. She didn't know he'd been captured. She got the same message as my parents got. Believed killed.
And
it was some time later when we found out he'd been captured.
But did she receive notification while the war was on that he was alive?
Just before the end of the war. Because all the last few... The Germans were frightened of the Russian front. If their men was at the Russian front, they didn't expect them back. It was that bad. News that was going back in Russia. Even the German news was bad. Back in Russia. So, they weren't surprised to find out that the husband or the boyfriend or sons, was killed in Russia. And I think there were more returned after the war than was expected.
Were there, amongst your German workmates, was there any other incidents where you can remember that people had sons involved in the war and then news came back?
Later on, Otto and our gaffer, and the two other civilians, they were getting to a point where they blamed the Germans for the war. But they were still frightened to only have to say it in front of any devout party member. And they never talked about them. When they were just the same, we said, we'll be half a dozen of us. Because we used to sit and talk. And we got talking to them, and there was loads in the war, and then the Germans, the army, for not packing in sooner. They were really surprised that they allowed the war carried on into Germany. They thought it would have been finished before, because they had the anti-war war, didn't they?
Now, you were in the lager, and we've talked about, you know, the family that lived upstairs. What do you know about that family? There was the coal miner, the coal merchant.
Coal merchant. Well, he was a general merchant. He did all sorts of things. He was a carter, and he had a daughter. Now, I can't remember whether she was married and her husband was in the forces or not. I rather believe she was. And she lived at home with her father. And they also had a maid living with them. The daughter was dark-haired, which wasn't good for... A true German was supposed to be blonde, but she was dark-haired. So, and the other girl was dark. But they were quite friendly, and more friendly so with Tom and Ben Lewis, because they used to visit him. And they used to make cakes for him. And they didn't have a bloody birthday, either. They made, as I say, they used to, Ben and them used to get the fat out of the food party and take it upstairs to them.
You've talked about they had a way of sneaking up the stairs. And
well, they didn't go up the stairs.
Through the windows.
They went through one window, and the women upstairs had their window open. And they used to... The circle, the arch, there were three windows in the lager. And the centre one had a bigger arch. Well, they all had arches, and bars across the windows, you know, horizontal. And Tom and Ben found that, well, Tom had no difficulty, that if they went, laid on the back and went through the top of the arch, between the top bar and the arch, they could get out of the window and up to the window above. And they didn't get a lot, they had no trouble coming back because it was more of an awkward.
You had a story about George Eugene, I think you mentioned off the tape.
They used to knock on the window, because we shut the windows, and when they wanted to come back in, they used to knock on the window, and Evans was the nearest bloke, because his bed was nearest to that window. So obviously when they came back in, George the General would get out of bed, come across and stand on Evans's bed, and if they were bringing some food back, they would hand it through to George. Tom usually came first. How they did it, I don't know I don't know how they come down. We know they went up because they just had to go through and they could get out, sort of sit on the top bar and reach the windowsill above them. But it must have been much more awkward to come back that way.
Can you remember the first time they tried to get
the
up?
The first time they went, we didn't believe them when Ben Lewis was. We sat talking, playing cards and whatever. And Ben said that me and Tom's going out tonight. Well, I had a key to the lager this time. I thought, well, I think we're the only going to get out. So he said, we've worked it out with, what's the call of them? What do you mean? Anyway, the girl upstairs, the daughter, where they'd met them to really talk to them enough to make these arrangements, I don't know. But Tom went through the window on his back, up, and he disappeared. Ben was going through and he had a hell of a bloody job, because he was fatter than Tom. He had a hell of a job to get through, and George Jenkins finished up pushing him through from our side, and he used to have a job to get back in. As I say, coming back in was much more difficult. Because the windows, the only distance between the windows was about 2 foot, 2.5 foot. Same as it was between our windows. But there was, obviously the women upstairs were waiting for them to help them into the... whether the old man helped them in or not, I don't know. But they must have been in contact with him much more than we realised to have been able to make the arrangements.
And how often would they kind of sneak out in that way, in a way?
Well, the first time or two, it was just maybe 2 nights a week, and then it got to be a really fairly regular. The only thing they had to watch was making sure the costume wasn't about. So it used to be after midnight before they used to go up more often.
And what was the attitude of the other prisoners to the fact that they were sneaking out?
I always thought they were, they were lucky. And I mean, there was no way anybody else could go. I mean, we all had surmised what they were going for. But they brought food back with them, and Jock and Genty, they got the benefit of sweet stuff like apple pies and that from losing the fat out of the cross prices.
Now, apparently, Tom Tunney and Ben Lewis, they could listen to the radio upstairs,
yeah.
So they had access to the news, and you had access to the news. Towards the end of the war, were you still wary of communicating that to the Germans,
yeah.
even towards the end?
We was always wary of getting into the people in the village got to know the news, but it was obvious that it was coming from somewhere. You know, because it was different news to the German news. It was always detrimental to the German news. But people, at this time of the war, the people in Germany were beginning to realise that they weren't doing the war.
Now, as you moved into mid and late 1944, were there any extra supplies of material from the Red Cross? In the photograph that you had taken, all your uniforms looked quite new, so where did they come from?
They come from the Red Cross.
And what did you get?
We got, I think altogether we had three big Red Cross. These came in like teachers, and there'd be maybe half a dozen overcoats, and then the same number of battle dresses, complete. And they were handed out to them, the fitted. And eventually, we were all sort of kitted out afresh. And this is the only thing that young Dave was any really good for. He could alter your clothes for you. Now he put a gusset in the back of your battle dress if it was too tight. But he did do that. I think we got accepted later on, really. But it never fitted in.
Did he charge you for that?
Only cigarettes.
What about boots? Because you mentioned earlier that you had wooden clogs.
I had wooden clogs. Most of the lads had wooden clogs. But if parcels from home, I didn't get any parcels until just before I was ready to move. And the only thing I wanted was some new boots, because the boots I had, we never got any boots from the Red Cross.
So the boots you had were the boots you were captured in?
Yeah, and now we wore out. But if your boots wore out, or if you got wooden clogs.
From the Germans?
From the Germans. And they were horrible. All that, and some of the people in Lancashire that used to wear wooden clogs to go to work, and obviously. But they were just crude wooden clogs. They were just a wooden sole with a canvas sort of top to hold them on with. And the thing I couldn't handle was it was sort of sloppy. There was no heels to them. So they sort of. And the Europeans, the Frenchmen and the Poles and the Russians, they walked about in without any bother, but I always found them a struggle to keep me on my feet. And they all had my feet.
And about how many of the men had to have clogs then?
There was only about. Well, George Gender had boots, Tony had boots. Most of them had boots. I had boots, but they got so that I couldn't wear them because there was water through. If the weather was dry, I wore my boots, and I was supposed to wear them. But if the weather was wet or snow, I had to wear the clogs.
And I think you mentioned off the tape that boots, some boots turned up.
Well, they did, prior to leaving.
When?
Oh, only a week before the last parcels were delivered. We actually cleared them out of the station the week before we left. We had to march to... Where the hell did we march to?
Oh, we'll get to that.
Anyway.
Now, still in 1944, what about things like, you know, you'd been in Germany for, you know, best part of a year now. What about things like haircuts and, you know, soap and that kind of thing? How were those dealt with?
Well, soap we got in Aircross parcels.
There
was no difference in soap. We could plug soap to the Germans. There was always a bar of soap in the parcel. Haircuts. The Boston arranged for a barber to come into the lager and cut the hair. But I was on mine cutting in Mrs. Price's old father with a proper barber. The bloke who came up to the lager was a Frenchman. A pretty old POW. He had the equipment. But he wasn't a good barber. He was a Frenchman, I'm sure he was. But I had mine cut in the village with the village barber. He used to come to the house and cut mine.
Hmm. Would you trade with these barbers?
Oh, yeah. It was nearly all cigarettes. Because most of the German men smoked, and that barber was, the village barber must have been in his 60s. But he still smoked, and that's all. If he wanted German marks, Mrs. Price would pay him, but usually wanted a couple of fags as well, anyway.
Now, over this period, did anybody get into trouble with the German authorities, any of the British prisoners?
No, I don't think we did, not really. Only time we got into trouble was at that incident in the cinema, which we've already discussed. We did get into trouble about that. The Burgomaster was very, there were no more tricks for the POWs, that was it. That was one and only.
Was there anything that, you know, in terms of like, you know, you were trading with the Germans, you were trading with French people as well. Was there anything about that you were scared of being found out, that you'd be punished for, or was that just accepted that it would be?
Well, we traded with we bought... Otto Nolan used to give him cigarettes, he and Georgie Gent and Chris Kite and Phil Kite. Because early on he treated us fairly well. Well, later on it came that we was better off than he was, you know, especially in the way of cigarettes. But Otto would never smoke an English cigarette in front of Ernst, I forget what Ernst's last name was. And Otto would maybe bring him a sausage, a German roast. And we once, because I'd been a butcher, or an apprentice butcher, I don't know, a full time butcher, Fidel, the assistant burgomaster, was killing a pig into his own house. And it was I think it would have been 28 stone pig. It was absolutely golden. So I was helping him do it. And everything from that pig, apart from the two hands, went into skins. You know, into sausage skins. Liver, everything but the two hands was served. We all went into different, not the same sort of sausage. I mean, there was liver wurst, then there was just the meat wurst. Because they all went into every bit of that pig went into sausage skins. And I learnt how to clean sausage skins. In England, sausage skins was, if we killed on a Monday, the sausage skins was put into brine and then left in soak. And then Friday we'd have to scrape them. And we scraped them out from the outside with wood and took all the stuff out. In Germany, the butcher, he was a butcher who came from Pretzsch, to kill this pig. He killed it, I didn't kill it, he killed it. And he just, he got the skins and he turned them inside out and cleaned them immediately. And I thought, well, good, if I could pull this job. When I get back to England and saw Dickens and I was clean, he wouldn't believe it. It was that easy. But what we used as chicklings, that's the, like the big part of the stomach, the large intestine, they was done exactly the same way, and they was used as sausage skins. So everything that would hold meat was used as a, and they also, it obviously got some extra on from somewhere because it was a big thing, but everything but the two hands was put into skins.
Were you allowed to have any of it?
I got some of it, yeah.
What did you do with it?
I took it to the lager. Everything went to the lager if you really, for saying there was 20 men, we shared well.
Now, moving up to Christmas 1944, what do you remember about that? The actual Christmas?
That was the second Christmas, wasn't it? Well, 1944, things was a lot better. It was getting, parcels for some time. Tony and Smithy had organised a bit of a choir, you could call it, a bit of a sing song, and we were getting, Tom thought it was, and we had the piano accordion, so I don't actually say it would be Smithy and Tony who organised it, we had a Christmas concert, and we invited some of the Germans to it as well. We think when they came up to the lager, and the main song of the evening was Lily Lamette, but it was quite a good deal, and we were able to give Mrs. Price, Trowdle, Otto Norman, who was our foreman, and Tom Bolt. The brick is brought, but Winnie didn't come.
That was the brickyard farmer.
Yeah, they didn't bring him, but there was somebody from the brickyard there. And we were able to give them tea, biscuits and cheese, and which they'd never tasted for such a long time. But the Germans don't like tea, not the same as English people do. Probably quite a good night.
What else did you do? Was there any kind of comedian kind of turn or anything like that?
Well, there was Georgie Jenk was a, he didn't tell jokes, he told of his experiences before, but the, I mean you couldn't have a comedian because the Germans would never understood it, never understood me, but and I think a lot of the what the Georgie's, what George was telling us was different experiences that he had, which we could understand what he was on about, but the Germans had, and the Germans had a very poor sense of humour. But it was, we entertained them instead of us, and it's quite a good piece of mind.
Was the guard there?
Yes, I was. He was the old young guard, wasn't he? The new guard. And he was quite he was a professional, he was a soldier from the front line. And there was a difference between the real soldier and the German home guard, whatever you like to call him. He was a proper soldier. His father was there. Because his father slept on the table in his billet that night.
He was the only guard that you had, only had one guard at the time.
Yeah.
Kind of discipline was he under? What kind of, did anybody ever come to make sure he was doing his job?
Well, he was controlled from Wittenberg by the sergeant major was in charge of him. Originally had been at 4B, as a sergeant major at 4B. And then he was moved to Wittenberg. And he was in charge of the Sikhs. apparently there was another working party at Fletch. That's where Sangster come from, and Joe Price. They'd been working in Fletch. And all, apparently there was a lot of little, well, there must have been, because the blokes who were left on that trailer where we got up at Speedway were going on to somewhere else to work. And that Sergeant Major was in charge of the guards of all these little stations.
Did the guard or his superior inspect the hut at any time?
No.
Did he inspect your appearance? Or
no.
So he was really just concerned with getting you out of bed and making sure.
All he did was make sure you got up in the morning and you were ready for work. You didn't shave, it didn't matter. All I had to do was clean the larder. It had to be kept clean for the room.
And you mentioned earlier that this guard was quite a standoffish kind of. Did this continue right at the end of the war?
Yeah, he never got. He sort of kept his proper distance as he would have done if it had been, you know. He didn't mingle with us the same as the first guy had. He didn't talk to us. When we went down into the village, I used to go down on my own eventually. Johnny Eiley and Smithy, they were far away from the lager. They were near the hospital. And when he took them down, he marched them down. He walked smart, he walked like a soldier. It was, you know, left, right sort of thing. And that's how he took the men down through the village when he went to work. They didn't just saunter down, they marched down as a group.
And that was in a contrast with the first guard?
Well, the first guard couldn't care less. They marched down because it was easy to march in a group. But they marched to Benny's. Benny Lewis was always in front of the wherever he was going, Benny was the front man. Then it was just habit of what I don't know. But, you know, some photograph, Benny's right in the front, leading them.
And I think you've mentioned off the tape that the guard, he said something to you about your soldierly bearing.
It wasn't not a soldier bear. You were on about the young guy again.
Yeah, the new one.
He said we weren't soldiers at all when he first came to that camp. He said we was. And that's when he flexed his rifle into the barrack room and gave us a demonstration of how we should be. And he said we should always be smiling at him. I think maybe we did smile ourselves up after that. Not for his benefit, but for our own benefit. We had got into a, not exactly a sloppy, but there was very few young men in the village were all POWs. Even the Russians were young men. The French were young, but were young soldiers, you know. That. And we got into an easy way of moving about.
Now, you mentioned the hospital in the village. What was that for?
For wounded soldiers.
Wounded German soldiers?
Wounded German soldiers.
And did you have much contact with that place?
The only thing we ever saw was a number of French letters that was used there. It was bloody amazing. There was a stream run on the outside of Smederberg. It went past the hospital and then past the bathhouse, because all the wastewater from all the mud from the baths went down the yard into an area where the mud settled and the water drained off into the stream. Well, if there's like little gullies to cut, and if they got blocked up, me and Johnny Eiley or Smithy had to go clean them. Gently anyway. Anybody who was there to maybe go dig them out. And we marked on a number of French letters what was being used at that German hospital. Who was with, I don't know, but some of them were walking wounded.
They
didn't walk into town. They very seldom was allowed into the village.
So the hospital was slightly outside of the village?
It was outside, nearly opposite the bathhouse, which was outside the village.
And so did you have any contact with these German soldiers?
No, we never did.
Never got to talk to any of them?
No, we saw them. The bathhouse was, there was a steel fencing between the bathhouse and the hospital.